Chapter 4. And he was rather used to think them out, and generally from his experience of life and men arrived at the right conclusion. This bit of self-praise, of course, fitted excellently the laborious inanity of the whole conversation. The whole thing strengthened in me that obscure feeling of life being but a waste of days, which, half unconsciously, had driven me out of a comfortable berth, away from men I liked, to flee from the menace of emptiness. And to find inanity at the first turn. Here was a man of recognized character and achievement disclosed as an absurd and dreary chatterer. And it was probably like this everywhere from east to west, from the bottom to the top of the social scale. A great discouragement fell on me. A spiritual drowsiness. Giles' voice was going on complacently, the very voice of the universal hollow conceit. And I was no longer angry with it. There was nothing original, nothing new, startling, informing, to expect from the world. No opportunities to find out something about oneself, no wisdom to acquire, no fun to enjoy. Everything was stupid and overrated, even as Captain Giles was. So be it. The name of Hamilton suddenly caught my ear and roused me up. I thought we had done with him, I said, with the greatest possible distaste. Yes. But considering what we happened to hear just now, I think you ought to do it. Ought to do it? I sat up bewildered. Oh, what? Captain Giles confronted me very much surprised. Why? Do what I have been advising you to try. You go and ask the steward what was there in that letter from the harbor office. Ask him straight out. I remained speechless for a time. Here was something unexpected and original enough to be altogether incomprehensible. I murmured, astounded. But I thought it was Hamilton that you... Dot, exactly. Don't you let him. You do what I tell you. You tackle that steward. You'll make him jump, I bet, insisted Captain Giles, waving his smoldering pipe impressively at me. Then he took three rapid puffs at it. His aspect of triumphant acuteness was indescribable. Yet the man remained a strangely sympathetic creature. Benevolence radiated from him ridiculously, mildly, impressively. It was irritating too. But I pointed out coldly, as one who deals with the incomprehensible, that I didn't see any reason to expose myself to a snub from the fellow. He was a very unsatisfactory steward and a miserable wretch besides, but I would just as soon think of tweaking his nose. Tweaking his nose, said Captain Giles in a scandalized tone. A choose it would be to you. That remark was so irrelevant that one could make no answer to it. But the sense of the absurdity was beginning at last to exercise its well-known fascination. I felt I must not let the man talk to me anymore. I got up, observing curtly that he was too much for me, that I couldn't make him out. Before I had time to move away, he spoke again in a changed tone of obstinacy and puffing nervously at his pipe. Well, he's a no-account cuss anyhow. You just ask him. That's all. That new manner impressed me, or rather made me pause. But sanity asserting its sway at once, I left the veranda, after giving him a mirthless smile. In a few strides I found myself in the dining room, now cleared and empty. But during that short time various thoughts occurred to me, such as that Giles had been making fun of me, expecting some amusement at my expense, that I probably looked silly and gullible, that I knew very little of life. The door facing me across the dining room flew open to my extreme surprise. It was the door inscribed with the word T-word, and the man himself ran out of his stuffy, philistinish lair in his absurd, hunted animal manner, making for the garden door. To this day I don't know what made me call after him. Say, wait a minute. Perhaps it was the sidelong glance he gave me, or possibly I was yet under the influence of Captain Giles' mysterious earnestness. Well, it was an impulse of some sort. An effect of that force somewhere within our lives which shapes them this way or that. For if these words had not escaped from my lips, my will had nothing to do with that, my existence would, to be sure, have been still a seaman's existence, but directed on now to me utterly inconceivable lines. No, my will had nothing to do with it. Indeed, no sooner had I made that fateful noise than I became extremely sorry for it. Had the man stopped and faced me, I would have had to retire in disorder. For I had no notion to carry out Captain Giles' idiotic joke, either at my own expense or at the expense of the steward. But here the old human instinct of the chase came into play. He pretended to be deaf, and I, without thinking a second about it, dashed along my own side of the dining table and cut him off at the very door. "Why can't you answer when you are spoken to?" I asked gruffly. He leaned against the lintel of the door. He looked extremely wretched. Human nature is, I fear, not very nice right through. There are ugly spots in it. I found myself growing angry, and that, I believe, only because my quarry looked so woe-begone. Miserable beggar! I went for him without more ado. Understand, there was an official communication to the home from the harbor office this morning. Is that so? Instead of telling me to mind my own business, as he might have done, he began to whine with an undertone of impudence. He couldn't see me anywhere this morning. He couldn't be expected to run all over the town after me. "Who wants you to?" I cried. And then my eyes became open to the inwardness of things and speeches, the triviality of which had been so baffling and tiresome. I told him I wanted to know what was in that letter. My sternness of tone and behavior was only half assumed. Curiosity can be a very fierce sentiment at times. He took refuge in a silly, muttering sulkiness. "It was nothing to me," he mumbled. I had told him I was going home. And since I was going home, he didn't see why he should. ... That was the line of his argument, and it was irrelevant enough to be almost insulting. Insulting to one's intelligence, I mean. In that twilight region between youth and maturity, in which I had my being then, one is peculiarly sensitive to that kind of insult. I am afraid my behavior to the steward became very rough indeed. But it wasn't in him to face out anything or anybody. Drug habit or solitary tippling, perhaps. And when I forgot myself so far as to swear at him, he broke down and began to shriek. I don't mean to say that he made a great outcry. It was a cynical shrieking confession, only faint, piteously faint. It wasn't very coherent either, but sufficiently so to strike me dumb at first. I turned my eyes from him in righteous indignation, and perceived Captain Giles in the veranda doorway surveying quietly the scene, his own handiwork, if I may express it in that way. His smoldering black pipe was very noticeable in his big, paternal fist. So too, was the glitter of his heavy gold watch chain across the breast of his white tunic. He exhaled an atmosphere of virtuous sagacity serene enough for any innocent soul to fly to confidently. I flew to him. "You would never believe it," I cried. "Tea was a notification that a master is wanted for some ship. There's a command apparently going about, and this fellow puts the thing in his pocket." The steward screamed out in accents of loud despair, "Colin, you will be the death of me." The mighty slap he gave his wretched forehead was very loud too. But when I turned to look at him, he was no longer there. He had rushed away somewhere out of sight. This sudden disappearance made me laugh. This was the end of the incident for me. Captain Giles, however, staring at the place where the steward had been, began to haul at his gorgeous gold chain till at last the watch came up from the deep pocket like solid truth from a well. Solemnly he lowered it down again and only then said, "Just 3 o'clock. You will be in time, if you don't lose any, that is." "In time for what?" I asked. "Good Lord. For the harbor office. This must be looked into." Strictly speaking, he was right. But I've never had much taste for investigation, for showing people up and all that, no doubt ethically meritorious kind of work. and my view of the episode was purely ethical. If anyone had to be the death of the steward, I didn't see why it shouldn't be Captain Giles himself, a man of age and standing, and a permanent resident. Whereas, I in comparison, felt myself a mere bird of passage in that port. In fact, it might have been said that I had already broken off my connection. I muttered that I didn't think it was nothing to me. Nothing. Repeated Captain Giles, giving some signs of quiet, deliberate indignation. Ent warned me you were a peculiar young fellow. You will tell me next that a command is nothing to you, and after all the trouble I've taken to. The trouble? I murmured, uncomprehending. What trouble? All I could remember was being mystified and bored by his conversation for a solid hour after tiffin. And he called that taking a lot of trouble. He was looking at me with a self-complacency which would have been odious in any other man. All at once, as if a page of a book had been turned over disclosing a word which made plain all that had gone before, I perceived that this matter had also another than an ethical aspect. And still I did not move. Captain Giles lost his patience a little. With an angry puff at his pipe, he turned his back on my hesitation. But it was not hesitation on my part. I had been, if I may express myself so, put out of gear mentally. But as soon as I had convinced myself that this stale unprofitable world of my discontent contained such a thing as a command to be seized, I recovered my powers of locomotion. It's a good step from the officer's home to the harbor office, but with the magic word "command" in my head, I found myself suddenly on the quay, as if transported there in the twinkling of an eye, before a portal of dressed white stone above a flight of shallow white steps. All this seemed to glide toward me swiftly. The whole great roadstead to the right was just a mere flicker of blue, and the dim cool hall swallowed me up out of the heat and glare of which I had not been aware till the very moment I passed in from it. The broad inner staircase insinuated itself under my feet somehow. Command is a strong magic. The first human beings I perceived distinctly, since I had parted with the indignant back of Captain Giles, were the crew of the harbor steam launch lounging on the spacious landing about the curtained archway of the shipping office. It was there that my buoyancy abandoned me. The atmosphere of officialdom would kill anything that breathes the air of human endeavor, would extinguish hope and fear like in the supremacy of paper and ink. I passed heavily under the curtain. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.